Welcome to Blood, Sweat, and Cells, real talk about sickle cell disease. This is a podcast dedicated to providing in-depth educational information about sickle cell disease for patients and their families. I'm your host, Valerie Bay, from the Heart of Gold Sickle Cell Foundation of Northern Virginia. And with me on this edition is Paige Gordon Jr. and Sr. to talk about their journey as a family going through the process of having a bone marrow transplant. Paige, let's start with you. You're now 17.
Yeah.
Okay. And your bone marrow transplant was approximately 2 years ago?
Yeah, about so. Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. Now, do you recall how the conversation to have a bone marrow transplant came up and why you and your dad decided it would be a good option for you?
That's an interesting question. The memory is fading a little bit now, but the conversation to have a transplant happened like when I was a lot younger. Like the earliest memory I have was not when I was at least like maybe 10, 8, 9 years old. And I remember, you know, us going to Children's National and they were talking about like a bone marrow transplant and saying how they'd have to put like a line in my chest. And I was so young, I thought that they actually like punched a literal hole in like my chest where my heart was and like put like a line in there. I didn't know anything about like the PICC line or the regular line that they would usually put inside of my chest. So at that point, I was so young, I didn't understand anything about it. But as time slowly passed, we eventually began to consider the transplant a lot more. And eventually, I'm not entirely sure how it started, but I just remember that around 2020, 2021 time, we started doing more, going to the hospital more, doing a lot of doctor's visits. They would test my lungs, they would test my heart, they do EKGs and stuff like that. And eventually, that all eventually led to the transplant process itself. But ever since I could remember, we have always planned about doing something against my sickle cell in some way, shape, or form. And that thing, in this case, eventually culminated in transplant.
Paige Sr., you know, as a dad, you know, what were some of the difficult decisions you had to make before starting the process of being evaluated for your son to have a bone marrow transplant?
Well, the biggest issue, well, first of all, thanks for having us here. We really appreciate it. And you guys have been a tremendous support pre and post bone marrow transplant. So hats off to you guys for being there for us. We were looking initially, I started looking at a lot of the research into getting a bone marrow transplant, any kind of way to, you know, relieve some of the pain Paige was going through, better quality of life. And this happened since he was very young. I've had him as a single parent since he was like 5 years old. And started to see his quality of life start to go down significantly. And he didn't have a lot of pain crisis necessarily, but he would have issues with his joints. He would frequently be sick, very vulnerable to, you know, catching colds and joint pain and things of that nature, kind of following up with your questions previously. And at some point, I saw a report, I think it was on the national news, maybe 60 Minutes, where there was a young lady who went through a bone marrow transplant. And I remember bringing it up to the doctors, and they were kind of like, mom's the word. I'm like, why are we not looking into this? This was at Walter Reed. As a military family, active duty military member, we were going through the military system. And they had connections with Children's Hospital, National Institute of Health, so forth and so on. So as we begin to look a little bit deeper into it, I kind of pushed them, you know, the CRISPR method, the bone marrow transplant method, finding out what could possibly be best. And finally, when I was able to kind of narrow someone down, they were like, hey, this could be a high fatality, a potential fatality scenario if your son goes through this. And it was a pretty high percentage. And then I kind of realized why the doctors were not incentivized to kind of participate in that. So fast forwarding to where the science did kind of catch up to where we are now, it kind of flipped. I think it was a 70-80%, you know, fatality rate or something like that. Or if it was successful at all, then it was like a 70-80% success rate. And I reinitiated the conversation again, like, hey, can we look into it? Because I saw Paige's quality of life yet again. It was just getting worse. You know, we took extremely good care of him. You know, I don't think he has a taste for anything but water. He drinks water all day. You know, his diet is really good. But at the same time, you know, there's only so much you can do because he's dealing with that kind of a condition. But just to make a long story short, leading up to it, it was a very arduous process. There's a lot of insurance that's involved, a lot of financial commitment, a lot of time commitment being involved. And it's a big commitment for the child also, of course, because there's every single medical appointment you can think of, from, you know, of course, the blood work that's being drawn, to them checking out, you know, any kind of issues he may have with his brain, everything. So all the things in the medical procedures that the typical sickle cell patient and caregivers are used to, we had to go through that times four, you know.
Yeah. Wow. That must have been a little scary there initially. Now, Paige, Junior, I know you wanted to get some information prior to going through the process. And so understand that you were looking online to see what other experiences people had. And in your research, what did you find out?
Well, there was that 160, 60 seconds thing that my dad was talking about the person who had a transplant, when the news about it.
There 60 minutes, other, the 60 minutes 60 television
minutes?
Show.
60 yeah. minutes, yeah, not 60 seconds, sorry. There's also the other, this one guy who was also a YouTuber who posted his transplant story, but after he started making rap music, and I remember me and my dad sort of watching how he went from making transplant stuff to making rap music, and we were like, hang on, this is a little weird. He's using his opportunity from the transplant and isn't using it to its fullest potential. And there were some other people that we watched as well. I forgot exactly who, but there were a lot of stories that we saw about people going through the transplant. And my dad sort of showed them to me to showcase, hey, that this is possible and it's something we could do to sort of help me get cured of sickle cell. And, well, it ended up becoming successful. And I ended up recording my own journey on my YouTube channel. And I think that can help out a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. So I understand Make-A-Wish Foundation made that desire to help others a reality for you.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, that's awesome. And how can people see these videos?
My YouTube channel, Paige Purpose 11, with no spaces and the P's capitalized.
Okay. Now, what are some of the key points you want to share with listeners about the process of having a bone marrow transplant? I don't think a lot of people really understand, you know, just basically what happens during the process. How would you explain it in your own words?
All right. Well, I'll say this. It's very mentally, emotionally, and physically tedious. Mm-hmm. My dad's pretty much summarized it greatly. It's like if you went through a basic, you know, average sickle cell doctor's appointment that you'd have maybe once a month or like once every 2 weeks, but three times a day for like 3 months, basically. Because you're constantly meeting doctors and nurses about very specific things. They're constantly telling you about medications. They're telling you about new procedures they're going to do on you. They're telling you about, they're giving you a whole bunch of medication that makes you loony sometimes. Sometimes it makes you angry. There's a lot of blood work as well. There's a lot of sterilization procedures. There's a whole lot of stuff. I'm probably not the, you probably could ask my dad and he'd probably give you a much more in-depth detail about what the transplant process was like. But from my perspective, being the patient who went through it, for me, it's really a lot of a blur because I went through so much stuff. It's hard to remember it all, but it was, as I've said, very mentally, emotionally and physically tedious. And the process itself takes a lot of energy out of you. Even though it's such a short amount of time, it's just about like a month, maybe 2 months you're spending in the hospital. You still have a lot of side effects from it. Like after the transplant, we went to the Ronald McDonald House. I had to live on. I couldn't eat certain things. I couldn't do certain things. I could barely move. I could barely speak. I was very lethargic, very unenergized. I take a lot of medication. Not only that, but every day I pretty much had to go to the Children's National Hospital, which also took a lot of a big toll on us as we were trying to plan to do our own thing that day. And I also had to do school as well because I had to do what's it called? Sort of like the Zoom school that was done during the pandemic. I had to do that basically every day for all of my classes with homebound teachers. And some of the homebound teachers were really good, some of them were really bad. Like my Chinese teacher wasn't homebound, she was my actual Chinese teacher. She sacrificed her own time just to teach me because she was that committed to helping me learn. But my English teacher, she didn't communicate with us a single time, nor did she communicate with our homebound teacher. And made it very difficult for both me and the homebound teacher who was supposed to teach me the material to understand what it was I was supposed to do. And I ended up failing my English class. And I had to learn this summer while I was going through the side effects of the transplant and had to recover throughout the whole thing. And not only that, but on another note, after the transplant and after we went back to our regular house, after the Ronald McDonald House, I had a crisis from the GVHD, which caused the doctors to have to give me a lot of steroids, and I had to like basically my whole gut was messed up, and I couldn't, and like for like a whole week I had to live on a liquid only diet, which sucked horribly. And like after that, when I got back home, the doctors gave me so much steroids that my blood sugar was going crazy. And so for like that next month, I basically became a diabetes patient, and I could barely do nothing there. And I had to carry around this big backpack that had all of these nutrients and fluids inside them that they'd run through the PICC line that was in my arm every single day. My dad would have to sort of refill that bag, and I had to carry this around me everywhere I went, and it got really annoying, really tedious. It wasn't fun. But even though the transplant itself and the side effects probably lasted for maybe a year or two, and like I said, it's very taxing, I will ultimately say that I would willingly go through the process again just for the wisdom that I gained from it. Because even though the transplant process was very painful and very taxing, it is only through suffering and through pain that we really get stronger in our character.
Oh, that's cool. Well, you're a very strong young man. I will say that. And I know that, with a bone marrow transplant, it replaces the unhealthy blood forming cells, stem cells, with healthy ones. So you had to have a donor. Who was your donor?
My dad
And
was.
okay. All right. You want to talk about that, Paige Senior, on being a donor and how that process worked?
Donors can be very difficult to find. So if someone is thinking about going through the process, they need to keep that in mind. I was a donor for my son. There were some stipulations and there were some requirements that I had. You're going through a medical process to donate bone marrow. So I had to be fit to do that. I was slightly overweight. I think there were some issues with maybe my blood pressure, I believe, at the time. So I had to lose about 20 or 30 pounds or something like that. I think I ended up losing about 20 or 30 pounds at the end of the day. So it was a lot of work and getting healthy myself. So I say all the time, in the absence of leadership, you must become one. And in facing that issue of a bone marrow donor, well, I'll do it. My son's mother, who was also tested to see if she could donate Unfortunately, she passed away right before the process. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, hey, I got to get myself together so I can be the one to donate.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do they actually get the healthy cells from you?
They harvest. You go through a medical procedure and you lay on your stomach and they put kind of a drill bit in your lower back, right? Ironically, in that part of your lower back that always hurts when you're getting old. Yeah. So they put like a little small drill bit and they just suck out the bone marrow.
Wow.
And they took a lot out. Mm-hmm. Paige has a picture of it on his YouTube page and it's like a bag like this big, you know, that thick. So they took a lot of juice out of me.
Wow.
And I was not expecting, to be honest, to be out that long. Like I could not walk for like 2 or 3 days.
Wow.
And so I won't go too deep into detail on that, but I was not a patient there. I was just with my son, but I kind of became a patient, but I wasn't a patient. And I'm like, can I, you know, I got to get some medication here because I couldn't move for a while. But those are things that you got to think about if you're going to be, it was just me and Paige, you know, we didn't, because it was COVID, and because the quarantine kind of environment he was in, mm-hmm. it was just me and him. And that's also when I realized that if I go down, this thing may end. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the doctors were as aware of that and the medical team, but I became aware of that. And that's when I kind of sobered up a lot during the process. I got to stay healthy. Mm-hmm. I got to be able to be available for my son. Because if something happens to me, if I can't recover from something properly, if I get sick, if I can't be mentally, physically, spiritually strong, this thing stops.
Yeah. Yeah. So you guys actually, I mean, I would say that it was even probably more difficult than it would be now to go through the process just because you did this during the COVID period. I mean, that's...
We did it during COVID.
Do you have any other advice for parents?
You broke up a little bit there, Val, but I think your question was, would I have any other advice for parents and their children?
Yeah, to think about. I mean, I don't know if I believe you were talking about fertility at one point being something you guys had to consider, mm-hmm. you know, for your son. Yeah. What other points would parents have to consider before doing this procedure with their kid?
There's a lot. After going through this procedure, I don't recommend it for everyone. This isn't a blanket mm-hmm. recommendation. Paige has his perspective as a patient going through it. By the grace of God, he has selective memory and can only see and remember certain phases of it. But it honestly felt like we were in the sixth or seventh ring of hell. It was a difficult process. Mm. It's a very financially burdensome process too. We had great insurance going through the military, but I'm still paying lots of bills. Are you financially capable of weathering through that kind of a storm? I'm at this time currently retired from the military, but it was just me and him. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that the average person could dedicate not only the time to going to appointments and living in a hospital and then subsequently living in the Ronald McDonald House or, you know, equivalent for approximately 3 to 4 months. And then wow. the recovery process, you know, afterwards where I was with him for what he mentioned during the GVHD or the graft versus host disease, where he ended up dealing with that, not necessarily for a week, but probably for the better point of 2 months or so. Mm-hmm. And then so we're talking about, you know, a person not working for, you know, 4 to 8 months.
It's a long time.
Mm. It is a long time. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have strong community around you because we haven't even got to the spiritual component of people encouraging you, people mm-hmm. being there for you, people sending you care packages. Mm-hmm. You got the financial point that goes with it. And seeing your child, you know, there's at least once or twice where Paige was close to death, you know, and as a parent, that's not something that we expected. We kind of went in bright eye and bushy tailed during this procedure. But, you know, looking at your child potentially dying, there is that risk. And there were times where I kind of sat there and I'm like, I need to start thinking about what I'm going to say at his funeral.
Wow. Yeah.
Because he was going through it and he was in so much pain and was literally suffering. So this is not a walk in the park. It's not something that I would encourage someone who is, doing things by themselves, doesn't have immunity. It could be tough. You want to go there with all guns blazing. You want to have all your bullets in the clip, and you want to have a lot of mental and social fortitude to be able to go through this. This is a very tough process, and you're going to have a lot of tests.
So would you say from beginning to end, Paige Jr., you started feeling good? Was it like a year for the whole process?
Maybe 2.5 years.
2.5 years. Wow. And how do you feel now?
To be honest, the process was so long that I don't really remember what I was like before it, but because my dad, like my dad said, I have a selective memory. My memory is not that good. So my dad could probably tell you.
I hate to interrupt you, Paige, but I'd like to say this too, Val. I purposely wanted Paige to go through this while he was young.
Right.
So that he wouldn't have, that long library of memories, and it would be something in his past. And I also wanted him to do, and this is important for the parents, I wanted him to do this also while he was young, so that having sickle cell and dealing with the trauma psychologically and the debilitation that comes with that mentally wouldn't be a part of his personality. He would forget kind of who he was as a handicapped child,
So, I see you now, you're involved in a lot of activities, Paige. Even though you don't remember, you're able to do basically anything you want physically. Correct.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, just to answer his question, Paige, very sensitive to weather, easily getting fatigued or tired. I think he caught mono for a while. Probably there was a time where I was working after I retired. I had to come home from work. It got to a point where it was 2 or 3 times a week where I had to quit my job. And so it's like, it's a tough thing, It's two sides of the same blade, where either I'm working and can't work because my son needs that kind of medical care. You're going to need community for that too. Or I go through this medical procedure that's going to help him, but I'm going to be out for, 4 or 5 months. And so it's, at either point, we were at the the business end of fate and a gun, and by God's grace, He allowed us to give him a better life by this thing working out for us, and that's just a blessing that we can't take for granted,
So your advice is just to think about it and not to go into this lightheartedly.
No way.
Everything that's involved and stuff, but were you? Like, now, can you say that you're happy with the end result of where Paige?
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. I see Paige. He has more. There's a word that I was playing video games when I was young, and I always love this word. He has more alacrity, more awareness, more strength, more vitality. And I knew something was up when, he was out shoveling snow one day, which could have been a death sentence, or at a minimum, not a literal death sentence, but he would find himself in the hospital. The next day, I know that we would be, a high temperature, and he would be somewhere in an emergency room. Yeah. But now I see Paige has more endurance, and he's a teenager now, and I don't have to worry about, now he's working. I would never have had the faith for him to be away from me, for long periods of time, let alone working, So it's just opened up, by God's grace again, it's just opened up a brand new chapter that we didn't know was possible. And this is through, of course, just the power of God and just the innovations of medical science. And both of us just, biting down and saying, we're not going to let this thing go until we get a positive result. and try and at the same time leave seeds and directions for other people that may want to come behind us.
Yeah. So you mentioned a support network was one of the things that's helped you through this mm-hmm. whole process then. So I guess that's something you strongly recommend that people have in place before they start stepping into it and doing their research.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Me and Paige, we really got to follow up with the folks, you know, but being in the Ronald McDonald House, our hundreds of trips to Children's National in the hematology clinic, we would see parents in there with, you know, their children. Some of them would be single parents. And I could not imagine how they may have been doing that on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would see some that may be immigrant families, and you would just think, I'm thinking, how in the world are they able to do this if they're an immigrant and it may be a single mother?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know.
I'm so happy the process worked out for you, Paige, and for you, Dad. And it's important that people, I don't think a lot of people think about being bone marrow donors themselves, but it's something that's greatly needed, especially by people of color, to go in and help in case someone can be a match to help with the transplant. Paige, is there anything else you want to add so viewers would know about your experience?
This entire process, I believe, was entirely thanks to God and entirely thanks to the support network from our church, from our family, from all of our friends,
mm-hmm.
because I believe that God wanted me to go through this event, not only because he wanted to strengthen my character, but because he wanted to get me wisdom so that I could empathize with people who have been through things like this. I can empathize with people who have had sickle cell, who have been through transplant, who have had chemotherapy, who have lost their family, who are Black or African American like me, who have had traumatic pasts, who have done bad things in their past. All of these negative things that have once previously tied my back is all being used by God, not to tie my back any longer, but to deliver me out from it and to help me be able to empathize with other people who are going through those same things that I have went through.
Yeah, I can see that. You've got the personality and, you know, you always make me smile every time I talk to you or see you. I think your videos are great. Like you had said before, you know, I really hadn't seen anything like that before, where you almost pretty much go through like a few weeks in the life of Paige Jr. as you're going through this whole process. So I'm so glad that you have that online for other people to see and, you know, just have a better idea of what to expect. But I want to thank both of you for coming on and talking to us and helping other parents and, you know, possibly patients who want to experience this process of getting a bone marrow transplant.
Hey, thank you for having us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, my name is Valerie Bay, and you've been listening to Blood, Sweat, and Cells, Real Talk About Sickle Cell Disease. And I want to thank Paige Jr. and Paige Sr. for sharing their journey with us about their experience.